I'd like to welcome back Anutima, too. Okay. Welcome back, Anutima. Okay, text one. Chapter one, text number? 19? Text 19.
19.
Okay. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Brahma tad upatharyatha saha devaischa taya saha jagama satrina jnanas tiram shirapayo nidhi Brahma tad upadharyata saha devaischaya saha jagama satri nayanas tiram kshira payo nidhe. Brahma.
Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
Tat upadharya.
Tat upadharya.
Understanding everything rightly.
Understanding
everything rightly. Atah. Thereafter.
Thereafter.
Saha.
Saha.
With.
With.
Devai.
Devai.
The demigods.
The demigods.
Trayasaha.
Trayasaha.
With Mother Earth.
Jagama
approached. Satri Nayanaha with Lord Shiva, who has three eyes. Tiram, the shore. Shirapaya Nidehe of the ocean of milk. Translation thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma, with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods approached the shore of the ocean of milk. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. After Lord Brahma understood the precarious condition of the earth, he first visited the demigods headed by Lord Indra, who are in charge of various affairs of this universe, and Lord Shiva, who is responsible for annihilation. Both maintenance and annihilation go on perpetually under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.8. Pritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam. Those who are obedient to the laws of God are protected by different servants and demigods, whereas those who are undesirable are vanquished by Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma first met all the demigods, including Lord Shiva. Then, along with Mother Earth, they went to the shore of the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu lies on a white island, Shweta Dweep. I don't know what your rules are here, but I'd like to read the next verse too. Okay, good. Text 20. After reaching the shore of the ocean of milk, the demigods worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the Master of the whole universe, the Supreme God of all gods, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. With great attention, they worshipped Lord Vishnu, who lies on the ocean of milk by reciting Vedic mantras known as the Purusha Sukta purport. The demigods, such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, King Indra, Chandra, and Surya, are all subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aside from the demigods, even in human society, there are many influential personalities supervising various businesses or establishments. Lord Vishnu, however, is the God of gods, Parameshwara. He is the Paramapurusha, the Supreme Being, the Paramatma, as confirmed in Brahma Samhita 5.1. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Krishna is known as, this is translation, Krishna, known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body, unquote. No one is equal to or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he is described here by many words in the Sanskrit. Jagannath, Tatra Gatva, Jagannatham. Then another is Deva Deva, Deva Devam, Vrishakapim, or Vrishakapi, and Purusha. The supremacy of Lord Vishnu is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10.12 in this statement by Arjuna. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adi Devam, Ajam Vibhum. Quote, you are the Supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode, and purifier, the absolute truth, and the eternal divine person. You are the primeval God, transcendental and original, and you are unborn and all-pervading beauty. Unquote. Krishna is Adi Purusha, the original personality of Godhead. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. Vishnu is a plenary expansion of Krishna, and all the Vishnu tattvas are Parameshwara, Kama, Deva Deva, period. You just happen to be on Canto 10, Chapter 1, or does this have something to do with preparing for Janmashtami? Just happened to be, how accidental. Okay. So we're hearing before Janmashtami about the events leading up to Krishna's advent. In fact, that's the title of the chapter, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction. So the events go in sequence that prior to Krishna's advent, there was a proliferation, an overabundance of demoniac kings causing so much trouble to Mother Earth that she was so much aggrieved that she assumed the form of a cow, very much distressed, with tears in her eyes, came before Lord Brahma and described the great misfortune on earth. So, Lord Brahma, hearing the plea of Mother Earth, in sequence, Prabhupada describes, he went to Lord Indra, or the planets of the Devas. He went to Svargaloka. And he also went to Kailash and visited Lord Shiva. And together they went with Mother Earth to this Kshira Payonidhe, to the ocean of milk. And in that ocean of milk, there is a white island that must look very awesome. A white island in the middle of an ocean of milk. And they offered their prayers to the Supreme Lord. With great attention, reciting, and the prayers were standard prayers. So there's different types of prayers. There's personal prayers that we can compose ourselves just from our heart, with feelings, offering our feelings to the personality of Godhead. And we can also offer prayers that are standard prayers. That's what the demigods did. The standard prayers are the Purusha Sukta prayers, where the position of the personality of Godhead, they're really nice prayers. They're describing the process of creation in form of prayers. And it starts going into the details about, you know, the four varnas and four ashrams and the different grades of living entities. But it all starts with where it all starts. Like, where does everything come from? And so, the everything is attributed to the source. And so, they didn't even have to say, help! Because it was understood. They were just glorifying the Lord. Very nice. It's something like in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where Arjuna is in big, big difficulty. Ashwatthama, he's pursuing Ashwatthama with a vow that he'll bring his head back. Not him, but bring it. He brought him back, but his vow was to bring his head back so that Draupadi could perform the funeral for her sons, pouring oblations into the fire, standing on Ashwatthama's head. So, in hot pursuit, Ashwatthama, his horse was expiring, and Arjuna was charging, and he panicked. So he turned and he released a Brahmastra weapon, and here comes this Brahmastra heading at Arjuna. So Arjuna offered prayers to Krishna, because that's what devotees do when they're in difficulty, and even when they're not in difficulty, they offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. And in the prayers of Arjuna, like the prayers of the demigods, he didn't say, Krishna, look at this fiery thing coming at me, and it's devastating, it's invincible. What did Arjuna say? He didn't say that. He said, like he said in this verse that's quoted from Bhagavad Gita, you are the Supreme Lord. You're the all-powerful source of everything that exists. And you hold your devotees very dear to you, and you're the protector of those devotees who are very dear to you. He's not, it wasn't just like a hint, like, you know, protection time. He was just appreciating the personality of God. That was his shelter. You're my shelter. So, it's like, you know, we're visiting here in Potomac. I'm visiting in Potomac, some of you live here. And so I see Anuttama and say, oh, Anuttama, and Chaitanya Bhagavan, you have such a nice temple that Prabhupada has given, and it's so wonderful, and Prabhupada has given us such nice teachings, and Prabhupada has given us such nice deities to worship, and such a wonderful project to take care of. And then it's like, okay, well, what do you want, Maharaj? Because to serve Prabhupada, we gotta take care of this wonderful thing that we've been given. It's just, that's the mood that's invoked by such appreciation. At least a pure-hearted soul will be prompted in that way. A contaminated soul will think, oh, yes. And I'm such an important person in charge of this. It's the service-mindedness. And so the Supreme Lord, the devotee may pray to Krishna for protection, but the Supreme Lord is moved, just like, if you have a child, and the child comes and expresses great affection to their protectors, their mother and father, and their dear friends. It's not like you need a prompt to say, okay, and now you show some reciprocal affection. It's just natural. So, that's the storyline. That's what the demigods and Lord Brahma, because he's not exactly a demigod, because the demigods specifically are controllers of the universal affairs, and Brahma is like the personality who is the superior amongst all those who are controllers of universal affairs. He creates, and Lord Shiva destroys, and the demigods, in service to Lord Vishnu, they maintain. They're the maintainers of the details, the requirements of air and water and sun and all the everything that's needed to make the whole show go. And Prabhupada makes this specific point in the purport for this morning. In all matters of creation, there's maintenance and annihilation factors. So Lord Shiva, the annihilator, and the maintainers as the devas, were approached by Lord Brahma, the creator. So now we have all three, creation, maintenance, and annihilation. And all of them are necessary for this, for anything that's of this temporary realm. And things of this temporary realm, they need the protection of the Supreme Lord. And so they're going to their protector. Prabhupada combines that notion with Pritranaya Sadhunam and Vinashaya Chaduskritam. Pritranaya Sadhunam, Pritranaya, the Lord delivers the sadhus, the devotees of the Lord, from whatever difficulty. And Vinashaya Chaduskritam, he annihilates, or admonishes, at least, the Duskritis. So, here are the principal agents in the universe who also do these things on behalf of the Lord, and now there's this service that they understand is beyond them. Of course, any service is beyond us minus the influence of the personality of Godhead, but their calculation is, their determination is, this one is beyond them. They need the direct involvement of the personality of Godhead. And this is the nature of the deva, or the godly, is they feel in ordinary day-to-day circumstances of life dependent upon the Supreme Lord, and extraordinary circumstances of life dependent upon the personality of Godhead, which means their attention is always going to him. And when the challenge escalates, they go directly to him. It's because it's their nature. That's a symptom or like in the discussion yesterday evening, our host was asking what are some symptoms that indicate we're progressing nicely in our awakening of our loving relationship with Krishna. So here's one. When there's difficulty, where does your attention go? You're challenged. Where does your attention go? And for the materialist, attention goes to, like, gather my resources and consider how I can manipulate my resources to meet that challenge. And a devotee, like the Arjuna example I just gave, or hear Lord Brahma and the demigods' challenge that was brought to them, because they're the maintainers of the universe. And here's the situation where the asuras have become so strong and powerful, it's beyond their control, not only Mother Earth's control, but beyond their control. Can't help but think about the world circumstance, you know, the accumulation of asuric leaders. You know, one type of asura and another type of asura, but where to find the godly? Krishna! So we go to Krishna. And the appeal to Krishna is glorifying him. So Prabhupada spent some time in the purport making it very clear. These glorifications are unique in relation to the personality of Godhead. Unlike even the demigods who are approaching him, they're not of these categories. Jagannatham, Jagannath, he's the Lord of the universe. Deva, he's the Deva of the Devas. He's the Lord of the Lords. And Vrishakapi, here the word for word Prabhupada has translated it as the supreme person, Vishnu, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. That's very nice. That's what a protector does. There's some requirement. Here's the requirement. You have some protection needed. Something is causing you some difficulty. Give you protection from difficulty. Vrishakapi. And Purusham. Of course, this is Parama Purusha, the Supreme Person, who has many living entities that spring from that Supreme Person, and therefore they can also be considered Purusha, but they shouldn't encroach upon the property of the Lord, thinking, I am the Purusha. So that's right within the verse. And then the Purusha Sukta prayers that they're offering are similarly describing the Lord's position as supreme. So this is the way of godly life. Param Brahma, since this is now the glorification or the acknowledgement of Arjuna regarding Krishna. Param Brahma, there is Brahman. We're also Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, we are Brahman. And Krishna is Parabrahman. Param Dhamma, because he resides in that realm of the Supreme, his abode is Supreme. He is, his manifestation is the Supreme Abode. Pavitram. Pavitram. He's Supreme Purifier. Pavitra. Pure. And because he's the Supreme Pure, he purifies all that he comes in contact with. Hare Krishna. Shashvatam. Divyam. He's the absolute truth. And he's the divine person. Prabhupada has translated it here. Divyam. Adidevam. The primeval God, the original person. Ajam. Original. Vibhum. He's the source of all things. Is Anu and Vibhu. The living entity is tiny and Krishna is unlimitedly great. He's the source of everything. It's natural when approaching a great personality. We used to have some week-long series of classes in Gita Nagari, kind of like following behind the wave of when the VIAG started. We started having Gita Nagari Institute for Higher Education, and teachers from different places came. And for 1 week, devotees sat in Gita Nagari and heard wonderful, wonderful. It was really a nice time. Interest diminished, attendance diminished, so we shortened it. But one time I got the idea, I'd like to give a class on the prayers from Srimad Bhagavatam. It seemed like, wow, that would be a really nice topic. And when I started preparing prayers from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it was overwhelming. Do you have any idea what percentage of verses in Srimad Bhagavatam are prayers? It's like half the Bhagavatam. I was like a big mouthful to chew on. It was too much. So I had to break it down and looked at what are some of the types of prayers. And almost all, largely, the feature of prayers in the Bhagavatam begin with just glorification. And my thought process went something like this. When I read those verses, just in the course of reading the Bhagavatam, it seems like, well, this is a nice way to present philosophy. You know, Vyasadeva is presenting philosophy. But that's not what it is. It's ecstasy of the person who comes before the Supreme Lord. And you come before a great person and you want to express your appreciation for them. What to speak of coming before the Supreme Lord. And the ways in which one appreciates the Supreme Person is those prayers of glorification. It's just natural. Go come down a little bit and say it's just etiquette. You come before a great person or a superior person and you express some appreciation for that person. Like say somebody comes to your house and there's etiquette. Some kind words. A sitting place and some water. Prabhupada says that these three things, at least those three things. It's just etiquette. What to speak of? Come before the Supreme Lord. Glorification. Exactly what Arjuna does in this 10th chapter, after Krishna discloses his identity in the Chaturshloki, that 10-12 verse that's mentioned, that's what he realizes. Oh, you're the personality of Godhead. Then it's glorification. It's what awakens from one's heart naturally. Then it makes that, another thing that it does is it, those prayers of glorification distinguish the Supreme Lord from any other entity. Because there's nobody like that. There may be a controller somewhere, but he is the supreme controller. There may be somebody that does something wonderful, but he is the source of all wonderful things, and so on and so on. He is unique. He is our real shelter. So it's a way of, it's etiquette, it's polite, it's good manners, but it's shelter-taking. Because what do you do? Prabhupada described like this once. Krishna consciousness is very simple. Understanding that God is great, and I am very small, and therefore I should serve Him. That is Krishna consciousness. So it starts with recognizing how great He is. So here's how great He is, and how great He is, and how, oh, He's so great. Therefore I should serve Him, because I'm not that. He's that. Therefore I should serve Him. Of course, if there's a cheating mentality, then you don't reach that conclusion. It's like, let's bring Him down, so I can push myself up. That's the envious spirit. But minus that envious spirit, it's, therefore I should serve Him. The final point that Prabhupada makes, connection here, is that these are the features of Govinda, the original person, Govindam Adipurusham. Just before coming here to Potomac, I spent some time with Jaikor Sundar and his wife. And his wife was asking in the course of the day and a half, I was with six times about the Govindam prayers. She's just meditating on the Govindam prayers. She's asking different things. She really wanted to deeply appreciate Krishna is the original person, and how Lord Chaitanya relates to Krishna as the original person. It's just like particular clarification points, so that shelter is very clear, because devotion is singular, love is singular, it's exclusive, Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion. So this Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, Prabhupada explains, Lord Vishnu is His expansion, and therefore He is also Jagannath and Deva Deva. He is that shelter for the demigods, for Lord Shiva, for Lord Brahma. So they're taking shelter of Him. He already knows what their heart is, what their concerns are. He's omniscient. They can certainly disclose them, but He knows. And so the most significant part of prayers is not the request. The significant part of the prayers is our acknowledgement of the person whom we're taking shelter of, and then deepening our inspiration to take shelter. So in these Bhagavatam prayers at the end, not always, but often, there's some request. But the request, by the time you get to the request, it's kind of obvious. It's like Gajendra's prayers. Gajendra is glorifying and glorifying and glorifying and glorifying and glorifying. He gets to the point where he says, I don't even have to ask, because I understand that you're the protector of your devotees, so surely you'll protect me. So let me make a different request than, you know, can you get this alligator off my leg? My request is, when you free me from this alligator on my leg thing, please keep me always engaged in your service. That's the real request. Come to the position of eternally serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, as Sankirtan Yagya is back there, cutting beans and distributing books and worshipping the deity and chanting the holy name. Let us do this eternally. Eternally. Eternally engage us in service. That's a nice prayer. That's what the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is. That's our prayer. Please engage me in your service. And when Krishna is very merciful, he engages us in some service, whether it's cutting beans or distributing books or worshipping the deity or cleaning the floor or taking prasadam or serving the devotees in some way. Some service. So here's a situation where all those collective assembly of great, great devotees, they're in difficulty. So the Lord then responds to their difficulty and arranges to relieve them. But that's the nature of a shelter-taking person. They understand, I have only one protection, that's you. I only have one object of service, that's you. Others may be agents of that protection, others may be agents of that service, recipients of that service, but the shelter ultimately goes to you. The service ultimately goes to you. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, training us, even with the advent of the Lord, that we're to serve the devotees, and the Lord will always protect us. Okay. Krishna. Any questions or comments? Anyone? Yes, Nirutama.
Right, sometimes devotees feel the protection of the Lord, and sometimes they may feel more correlation to what you're trying to prayer, which is between the grace of you and ignoring me. I don't know why you're ignoring me, but somehow it's left to call me praying. So, how does the devotee maintain enthusiasm through the absence flow of that experience of Krishna's presence?
Ebbs and flows of?
Krishna's experience of Krishna's presence and protection.
I'll share Yadubar's answer from our japa retreat in Sharanagati. It was very eloquent. It was because it was very concisely stated. This is after our 64 round day. His realization the next morning was, now I can't, this is not verbatim, but the essence of the message was that when we're serving Krishna, in this case by chanting or whatever the means of serving Krishna is, it's entirely a matter that's in Krishna's hand. And that's nice. That was his realization. And then he expanded. Somebody said, could you expand on that? We were speaking about the hills and valleys of chanting, or, you know, social service. Sometimes things are going smoothly, and some things are very challenging. And some things are way challenging. So, like in this circumstance with the so many demoniac kings. So, Krishna can respond as he likes. And it's part of the ecstasy of devotional life is that while we know that Krishna is our protector, that form of protection may not be what we think Krishna should be doing to give us protection. It may come in the form of some further challenge, which may have many purposes, like further taking shelter, like a deeper sense of dependence, like Draupadi, abandoning the other hand so that both hands are released and just depending entirely upon Krishna. It doesn't mean Krishna didn't protect Draupadi. Krishna certainly protected Draupadi, but there was a point where it looked like that wasn't happening, but there's an increased dependence that adds to the thrill, the dynamic of depending upon Krishna. So the worrisome spot or spots are where we don't turn to Krishna, or we feel that Krishna has abandoned us, or we just grab hold of our material resources and don't depend on Krishna at all, just by material conditioning rather than by devotion. So another way of saying the same thing is we're all on a path. The internal potency is bringing us to Krishna, and we're on a path of coming to Krishna. And of course, path of coming to Krishna, it may look bumpy, it may look hilly, or it may look valley. It may look bumpy, or it may look smooth. It's all just, the bigger picture is, Krishna is drawing us to Him. The faithful devotee understands that. He's very happy. Whether it's bumpy, or valley, or smooth. Kalakanta was describing to me, Sharanagati is a very interesting, nice place, a very interesting place. It's, if you look at it from above, it's like a football shape, you know, narrow, bulges, and then becomes narrow, and it runs north and south, this big valley. There's mountains, there's a mountain range on the north side, and then mountains that spread out and around, and then curve around in the back. There's Govardhan Hill on the back side and south side. They call it Govardhan. And then a nice big lake in the middle. And then agricultural land on all sides. So when Kalakanta was showing us the lay of the land, he said, see up there, there's this big mountain. He said a few years ago, some years ago, there was this huge fire that was coming in our direction. He said that mountain up there was a ball of fire. And everybody had to be vacated. But because there's prevailing winds that run through the valley going in a northerly direction, it stopped the fire. So all the devotees' homes were safe and so on. And how many times have things like that happened? I mean, there are things that happen that destroy or take lives or something like that. How many stories have we heard? Like, you know, 9/11. How many people worked in those trade towers that were devotees that weren't there at that very moment for the most bizarre reasons? Krishna protects his devotee. But, you know, it can be in the midst of here comes a fire or something, some calamity. But so it's like close to the edge, at the edge, over the edge, and Krishna protects the devotee. Especially those who are in that consciousness of fully depending upon Him. And in that consciousness of fully depending upon Him, just like death, when death does come, those who are fully depending upon Him, they know where they're going. I had a disciple recently who died of cancer. It was a prolonged thing. And they were blissful. It was just amazing. I mean, all the people around there were just like, they were joking. I can't wait. Their body was in so much pain, but their faith was with Krishna. So, you know, the negative is, why like this? Why so painful of the death? They were a nice devotee. Why would, you know, that kind of... So, in all circumstances, it's this say yes to Krishna principle. When something comes that looks like, oh no, here comes this calamity down the road, barreling right at me. We've got a few of our things happening here and there in our leadership roles that look like, ooh. There are opportunities that are awards for calling upon Krishna in surrender. Krishna's giving us that opportunity. Fully depending upon him. Because otherwise it doesn't make sense. And feeling Krishna's hand protecting and sheltering the situation. Sheltering us. That's the faithful devotee. Yes, in several ways. One is Krishna already knows. So what's the most important part is our opening of our heart and taking shelter. So that's the explicit part. The implicit part is Krishna already knows. So you can say it or not say it because Krishna already knows. Of course, Krishna already knows who he is too, so we don't have to make sure Krishna knows who he is. It's for our benefit. Our benefit is made by glorifying Krishna. Not by, our benefit is made by we ask something. Another way of saying the same thing is that one is love and the other is business, and which is more meaningful? We approach Krishna, it's like somebody approaches you and their mood is they want something from you. And it's not like you don't want to give something to somebody, but if their mood is just, I want something from you, it's not the same as somebody just appreciates being with you. Naturally you want to, in both cases you're happy to. It's just more meaningful, more rich, more fulfilling and rewarding if it's just an exchange, a loving exchange. So the greater part of a prayer is our glorification, our acknowledgement of how wonderful is Krishna. And the ways in which, let me count the ways. How much do I love you? Let me count the ways. And you count the ways. And that's the most significant part of a prayer. And in a relationship, there's give and take, and the significant part is the giving. And then there's also receiving, because it's part of a relationship. I just lectured on that section of the Bhagavatam where in the
Yeah, in the seventh chapter. That was the sixth chapter. That was the seventh chapter. The seventh chapter, first canto, where it's the first section in the first canto where Krishna Katha, directly pastimes of Krishna, glorification of Krishna, besides the philosophy that comes before that. The first lila is where Arjuna has this, you know, Ashwatthama beheads his sleeping sons, his sons and his brother's sons, Draupadi's sons. And it's the first set of prayers. In those first set of prayers, it's a calamity. And he doesn't ask for anything. He's glorifying Krishna. It's the first part that comes in the Bhagavatam. It's dramatically significant. Now, making requests is not like Maharaj Ambarish, when he offers his prayers to Sudarshan. He offers beautiful prayers to Sudarshan. It tells us a lot about Sudarshan. At the end is this request. The request is, if I've done any pious activities at all, that are worth anything at all, I hereby transfer all of them to Durvasa Muni, that fellow that just tried to kill me. I transfer them all to him so that he will be protected by those pious activities. He didn't even say, like, can you put on the brakes and leave him alone? His prayer was, please take my pious activities and give them to him. So who can have such high-minded thoughts but somebody other than somebody who has such appreciation for the personality of Godhead? So that's the most significant part. Like prayers to the holy name. If when the glorification of what is the holy name becomes so clear, what is there left but to take shelter? Or prayers to Govardhan Hill. How wonderful is Govardhan Hill? Where are you left? Take shelter. And so on. It flows. It just naturally follows. And so the most significant part is the glorification, the acknowledgement, clear, conscious acknowledgement of the greatness of the personality of Godhead, or the greatness of a devotee, or the greatness of that our heart is open and shelter is there. And, you know, the reciprocation from the other side is also very natural. Anything else? Yes? When there's a desire for relief from suffering. It's natural. I mean, you know, there's is wanting relief from suffering selfish? In one sense, yes. And at the same time, it's natural because we want to be happy. We don't like to suffer. But, you know, there's degrees of understanding what suffering is. The greatest suffering is forgetting Krishna. The greatest suffering is not, I've got a pain and my pain goes away, so now my suffering's gone. The greatest suffering is forgetting Krishna. So if the greatest suffering is forgetting Krishna, if we pray to Krishna, please keep me always in remembrance of you. Now you can look at the other side, because I don't like the consequences of not remembering you, because that's suffering. So I don't like that, so I want to just remember you. So much revolves around moods of service. So there's different moods of service. What's important is the mood of service in determining what's selfish, what's not. Okay, it's 9:00. We should end. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.